The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, Shanghai, a city of 26 million, is under a brutal lockdown. We'll take a closer look.
Breaks my heart to hear the screams from the high-rise apartment building.
Hunter Biden's laptop has become a legitimate story for elite media. Why now?
Is not because they suddenly saw the light. There's somebody driving it.
As Russia renews their offensive against Ukraine, how long can Ukrainians hold out?
So the Ukrainians will fight to the last man, they'll fight to the last boy.
And how far will Putin go?
This is fear-mongering on the part of Putin, particularly when it comes to the use of nuclear weapons.
We've got all this and more. I'm Mark Davis in for Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 7 to 10 a.m. Central, on 660 a.m. The Answer in Dallas-Fort Worth, or wherever you're online at 660amtheanswer.com. My home station, also easy to get on your handheld device through the TuneIn Radio app. Take a moment to follow me on Twitter at Mark Davis, and of course, follow the show at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with the pandemic. In our country this past week, we watched the back and forth of the administration over what to do with mask mandates for air travel after a federal judge in Florida said the CDC had overstepped its authority. But this battle over control of the populace in our country pales with what we see in China today, as the city of Shanghai is under complete lockdown as the Chinese Communist Party pursues its zero COVID policy. The people are starving. Stephen Mosher has been watching and writing about China and the Chinese Communist Party for over three decades now. He joined Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer, in Chicago.
You literally have, I mean, it's so, there's such despair. You have Chinese citizens jumping from their balconies because they can't take it anymore.
Yeah, it's a horrible situation. And, you know, it should resonate with every American, because in many American cities and states, we were very close to being Shanghai. Let's make no mistake. There are people in our government whose last name begins with F who would like to have locked us down for weeks at a time, hoping to kill the virus by keeping us isolated in cells of fear, even if we literally starved to death, not just for human affection, but for basic necessities like food and water. The videos out of Shanghai are just heartrending. I mean, it breaks my heart to hear the screams from the high-rise apartment buildings after, you know, 3 weeks of lockdowns. People going to their balconies and screaming out in the dialect of Shanghainese. What they're saying is people are dying. They say, Yao Ming. They say, we're ready to die. We're on the verge of dying. You know, all Americans hear are the screams, but what those people are actually saying is, we're on the verge. And some of them, of course, the only way for them to get out of their apartments because they're locked in is to actually jump to their deaths from their balconies. So it's a horrible thing that's going on. It's sort of the COVID nightmare of perfect control, total lockdown come to life in China. And make no mistake, there are people in other countries of the world who attempted the same thing. They failed, but do they admit their failure? Would they like to try again with an experience? Sure they would. So Shanghai is not just something we ought to be sympathetic towards. We ought to look at that as one of our possible futures and begin working and fighting against it.
Well, they're trying to have zero COVID, you know, cases, which is not going to happen. It's like trying to stop the cold, obviously. But it's a town of 26 million people. And how many are testing positive right now for COVID, and how many are being hospitalized?
Yeah, the numbers are just ridiculously low. You know, you've got 20,000 people. They're testing everybody every day, 26 million people. So they test and you get 20,000, 25,000 people who test positive for COVID. Who cares? Most of them, the vast majority, 95%, have no symptoms. They're not sick. They may have had a virus capsule or two that was detected by the test, but who cares? The virus is in the air everywhere. a few thousand have symptoms, but it doesn't matter whether you're symptomatic or asymptomatic. They lock everybody up. If you test positive for COVID, they take you away by force, throw you in a, well, they call it a quarantine center. It's more like a concentration camp. I'm very short on food and water, these concentration camps. No toilets, no showers available for the vast majority of the people in these concentration camps. If you have a child who tests positive for COVID, the child is 1 or 2 or 3 years old, they take the child away from you and put it in a separate quarantine center. How well do you think those children are doing being taken away from their parents? The list of abuses goes on and on. My favorite, least favorite, picture from the whole Shanghai thing is not people jumping out the windows, or off the balconies, I can't look at those. But there's one gentleman who moved his refrigerator out on his balcony and opened the doors and showed the inside of the refrigerator was completely empty. It was a mute protest, the only kind of protest you're really allowed in the People's Republic of China, to say, I have no food, I'm starving to death. But his story is the story of millions of people.
You know, 35 years ago, the world was fixated on Tank Man standing in Tiananmen Square, and everybody covered it, and everybody talked about it. When you have similar acts of protestation, like you're describing, against the human rights abuses of the Chinese communists, it doesn't seem like we're getting the same coverage from corporate media. It doesn't seem like we're getting the same statements of solidarity with the Chinese people that we got from corporate America back 35 years ago. Something's changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, something certainly has changed. All the major media companies in the United States are making money hand over fist in China. China has a huge propaganda budget, literally tens of billions of dollars, which is being spent to buy favorable media coverage all around the world, not least in the United States. And all of these media companies, you know, some of them have investments and interest in China itself. And they know, I mean, look, Disney knows that the Shanghai Disneyland would be shut down if it produces a movie critical of China. It knows that if it produces even a single scene which puts China in a bad light, that movie will not be shown in China. That's just one way that they manipulate the media companies in the United States and massage the message so that China is always presented in a positive light, if it's presented at all. So we're not hearing nearly as much about China these days as we should. We're not hearing about the Uyghurs in the far west who are actually victims of genocide.
Besides people throwing themselves off balconies, how are they protesting? Are people getting arrested? Is there any pushback this time around?
Well, people are taking to the streets in different neighborhoods. I mean, if you get hungry enough, you're going to break down the lock on your door. You're going to break down the barriers that the police have put up preventing you from going out in the streets and scavenging, literally scavenging for food on the shelves, the empty store shelves in the supermarket. And the reaction of the Chinese Communist Party has not been to say, maybe we pushed the people a little too far. The reaction of the Chinese Communist Party has been to bring in the People's Liberation Army, the guys with the big guns. Because the guys with the little guns, the local police, can't handle the crowds anymore because they've grown too large. So now we're going to bring in the guys with the big guns and bring in the tanks and armored personnel carriers to keep the people down. And, of course, they haven't just locked down Shanghai. They've locked down cities in the interior of China as well for a few COVID cases in their insane pursuit of COVID zero. But I argue that it's not has nothing to do with public health. The COVID zero policy is an effort by the Chinese Communist Party to say to the Chinese people, we are in absolute control. Don't think that we can't dictate where you live, what you eat, when you eat, and whether or not you eat at all, because we are in absolute control. But China's gotten very, very clever, as Peter Schweizer and others have pointed out, in something called elite capture. If you want to control the narrative, if you control what American foreign policy is towards China, then you begin co-opting future leaders. You go to the son of the vice president of the United States and you offer him sweetheart deals in China, and you simply give him literally tens of millions of dollars, knowing that part of that is going to go to the big guy, and when the big guy gets in higher office, he's going to pull his punches where China's concerned.
If you're wondering what does China have to do with what our elite media outlets cover in our nation, I think Mr. Mosher connected the dots quite well for us. Cheryl Atkinson has been watching the decline of journalism through our elite media outlets for years. She talked about the Hunter Biden laptop story with Chris Stegall on AM 990 The Answer in Philadelphia.
The laptop is real and it could be a problem. I mean, Gayle King and George Stephanopoulos, like mainstream people, are now talking about it, Cheryl.
Well, they are, but let's not be confused and think that across the board everybody's accepting that, because enough confusion has been sown, which is the point of all this obfuscation that happens in the media and propaganda, that I'm still seeing a lot of people who follow me or I communicate with on Twitter saying that's all just a farce. And what about Trump? And, you know, nothing that Hunter did was really bad. Joe Biden wasn't involved. So I still think at large, there's a lot of people who are confused by it. And I'm not sure the media is digging in the way one would expect if it were Trump, or B, if we were in a neutral news environment, more like we had some years ago.
I don't know how much you are for these sorts of political intrigue lines of thought. I know you're, as a journalist, you kind of just go where the story takes you. Maybe you don't care to speculate this way. But one wonders if the new storyline that people seem to be entertaining about Hunter, and maybe tracing it back to, I mean, just a couple of days ago, Gayle King was interviewing Joe Biden's sister. And was asking her, you know, are your brothers involved in this? Because there seems to be evidence that Hunter, you know, sending money to your brother Jimmy and maybe Joe. And it seems like there's this strain of thought that's entertaining. Maybe Biden is involved in this. And if so, that could really mean trouble. And if so, dispatching with him and his presidency. Do you want to go that far?
I don't know what the end game is, but I think you're onto something I can address. The idea that some in the media, the left-leaning media particularly, who were party to covering this up are now looking at it, is not because they suddenly saw the light. There's somebody driving it.
Yes.
And either the entities driving it know that there's material that's going to be exposed and they're, as we say, trying to get ahead of it. So there's a drip, drip of revelation so that when it happens, they say, oh, that's old news. We knew all that. That's one strategy. Or there is somebody gunning for Joe Biden for other reasons, and they think this could harm him. So finally, they've got this information being put out to the media. The media doesn't find this stuff on their own. If you've looked at some of my books, you'll see that when I first came to Washington, I thought it was that way. I would say, wow, look what the New York Times dug up. What an amazing source. And I came to learn that, well, there are some very good reporters at the New York Times, of course, that a lot of their so-called scoops come from people calling them because they work at the New York Times, and they're simply forwarding propaganda that somebody wants out, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the networks. So all of this tells me that somebody wants it out, and it's not the Republicans, because the media doesn't typically, the left-leaning media doesn't do the Republicans' bidding. So there's somebody in the works, either, again, trying to get ahead of something they think is going to come out anyway, or, yes, there's some sort of design to hurt Joe Biden for other reasons.
Coming up, Russia renews their offensive operations in Ukraine.
So the Ukrainians will fight to the last man, they'll fight to the last boy.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Mark Davis. The victory of Ukraine in setting back the Russian military in Kyiv will be studied by military experts for decades to come. But for now, just one battle in the broader war. Russia is regrouping. They've begun their offensive operations in the east, the area known as the Donbas region. I turn to my colleague Sebastian Gorka, a man who knows this material well. His family fled communist Hungary.
How long is Ukraine going to go? Is it amazing that they've held off the Russian jackboots for this long? And what is the end game? And, you know, where are we headed?
Well, it's absolutely stunning, given the fact that embarrassments to the U.S. military, like Mark Milley said, Kiev would collapse in 36 hours. Mm-hmm. But let's remember,
The Russia of today is not the Soviet Union. Its military is incredibly corrupt. It has a GDP the same size as Italy. It has a conscript army. It has generals who have stolen most of the funding into their own back pockets. And beyond that, we're talking of a nation, Ukraine, that is actually older than Russia, long before Rus land actually existed or the Duchy of Moscow existed. There was a state of Ukraine. There was Kiev. And this is a nation that in the 1930s suffered at the hands of the Kremlin already to the cost of 8 million Ukrainians starved to death by Stalin in the Holodomor. So the Ukrainians will fight to the last man. They'll fight to the last boy. The sad thing is that we have no leadership from the White House. We have an embarrassment of the, yes, the Polish can give them their MiG-29s and we'll backfill them with F-16s. And then 36 hours later, the Pentagon says, no, that's a bad idea. So, you know, God bless Vladimir Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. God bless real leaders like Boris Johnson, who just last week, that incredible footage without body armor, without an armored limo, walking around the downtown of Kiev. At least there are some leaders out there who understand this is Ukraine's 1776. So God bless them. They will fight till the end.
And that moment, I was inspired by it as well. And it's the kind of thing in ordinary times that would make me think, wow, perhaps an American president should do that. Not this American president. I'm sorry. I just don't see any way in which that imagery works out well.
No, the idea that first it's Boris Johnson who takes that secret train ride to Kiev. Then we see other heads of state from NATO nations, small NATO nations like the Baltic states. And the president of the United States is running away from 5-foot bunny rabbits on the south lawn of the White House. I mean, it would be a great parody skit for Monty Python or SNL back when SNL was funny. But no, this is the price we pay for having a corrupt, senile old man in the White House.
What is your overall broad thought about November 8th, 2022?
It is looking very bad everywhere. The Democrats are losing. Look at that post that Seb Gorka on Twitter. But look, let me ask you a very simple question. If we take politics out of the equation, in the last 15 months, can you name me one thing that has been good for America about the Biden administration?
Thank you. Vladimir Zelensky and the Ukrainian military have certainly exceeded expectations. No one predicted they would hold up so well against Russia's much more formidable military. But the question now, can Putin really lose? Can he afford to lose? If not, what will Putin do? Retired General Jack Keane joined my friend Joe Piscopo from AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
Chemical weapons from Vladimir Putin. President Zelensky of Ukraine says that could happen. The nuclear weapons. How closer are we getting to that being a possibility, General?
Well, certainly that has always been a possibility from the outset. And Vladimir Putin was waving that in front of Ukrainians and certainly more likely for the United States and NATO's consumption. He uses that to create fear and paralysis so people do not escalate and provide the Ukrainians with the kind of support that they need. I mean, certainly Putin has the capability to do just as President Zelensky is suggesting, but also Putin knows full well that the use of nuclear weapons is a huge game changer and he has everything to lose as a result of that as well. And the use of chemical weapons would likely bring a response from the United States for sure. Yeah. And possibly other NATO nations. So there's prices and deterrents that's out there. I think a lot of this is fear mongering on the part of Putin, particularly when it comes to the use of nuclear weapons.
Well, let's hope so, and chemical weapons as well. And you know, and on the ship, if I may ask General Keane, the one that the Ukrainians actually sunk on the Moskva. It was a guided missile cruiser. Did they or did they not have nuclear weapons on that ship? Do we know, sir?
I don't believe so. There's There's been no evidence of that in the past, that the ship's being used for that. But this is a very advanced warship that they have. They only, I think they only have four of these, and this is their flagship in the Black Sea. And credit, certainly credit the Ukrainians using two of their own Neptune missiles to take this ship down.
I love it. And General, I know you're a retired four-star general in the United States Army, if I may, but this, I'm reading here about the Moskva. I did not know this. And it was launched in 1979. That's an old ship. This is the best that Russia has, and their navy is that old, sir?
Yeah, they've got old ships in the navy. They keep their ships a lot longer than we do. We have found through the years, years of usage, that the cost benefit of keeping ships for decades really gets out of sight, and it's costing you more to maintain it than it is to build new. So ours are a much faster turn cycle than what they have. Listen, Russia has always had a problem with its economy, even when it was the Soviet Union, and recently certainly they've struggled considerably. They do take a disproportionate amount of their money and put it into the economy. I mean, excuse me, put it into military defense.
Yeah.
The Russian Navy is nowhere near what the United States Navy is in terms of the quantity of ships nor the quality of those ships.
Well, reading here, explosions rocked this Lviv area. They went into an area of Ukraine. Russians went in that was they thought was a city of refuge, a hub for refugees. Apparently, all bets are off with this Putin character, sir.
Yes, well, what they're doing is they're about to start a major offensive in the southeast in the Donbass region, a place where they've had troops there since 2014. They're very familiar with it. Mm-hmm. The war is going to change. It's going to be on open, flat terrain that lends itself to armor warfare, and that is why Zelensky has been asking for heavier weapons. The administration is getting them those weapons. That's good news. Other countries are giving them those kind of weapons. It's going to be very challenging.
Coming up, Congressman Jim Jordan on the crisis at our southern border.
I think it's intentional. I mean, what they're doing is deliberate, intentional, designed to just take away the border, because I don't know how any rational person could reach any other conclusion.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
The 2020 elections were one of the most corrupt in history. See the proof for yourself.
We tracked 2,000 mules making multiple ballot drops.
2,000 mules. The shocking new movie from Dinesh D'Souza.
One mule made 53 trips to 20 drop boxes.
2,000 mules. In theaters, two nights only, May 2nd and May 4th. Get your tickets now. Only at 2,000mules.com. 2,000mules.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in our partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Mark Davis, filling in for Hugh today. Hugh is enjoying France, I understand. He simply had to go. Meanwhile, our nation is facing a crisis at the southern border, with unauthorized border crossings exceeding 220,000 last month alone. And those numbers could dwarf what we're going to see in the weeks and months to come now as the Biden administration eases one of the few tools our border agents have had. You've heard about it, Title 42, a pandemic-related policy which essentially allowed quick return of those who cross illegally. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan is one of the strong voices for border security. He joined my colleague Bob France in Cleveland on AM 1420 The Answer.
To what do you attribute those nine Democrat senators saying they disagree with the with the end of Title 42? Is it because they see its value as a tool to try to limit illegal immigration, or is it more of they are still not convinced COVID is in the rearview mirror and they want this in place because of the health situation?
Well, it's more the former. I mean, it could be both with Democrats. It's more the former because many of them are up for reelection, and they realize that this is the only thing keeping a what's already complete chaos from being even more chaotic. I mean, the border agents tell us it'll go from 8,000 a day to 18,000 a day illegal migrants coming across the border. So, and this is on top of the record level we have seen in the 15 months that Joe Biden has been president. So, yeah, this is about pure politics. This is and you're seeing Mark Kelly, who's got a tough race in Arizona. You're seeing him out there talking about don't rescind this, keep this in place. This is the only thing holding back, having a little bit of a border still left.
When are we going to start holding the executive accountable here? He put Kamala Harris in charge of this, and we all know, well, I'm looking at the root causes to see why people want to come here from other countries. Even that is, I mean, not only are neither one of them going to the border, not only are neither one of them talking to Border Patrol agents, they're not talking to anybody responsible for securing our sovereignty down at our southern border. They refuse to go down. And now they're, from what I understand, when's the last time we had a statement from them about this quote unquote root cause problem?
Yeah.
What, if anything, I mean, literally, are they doing besides completely ignoring the situation and pretending it's not happening?
Well, I think it's even worse than that. We've talked about this. I think it's intentional. I mean, what they're doing is deliberate, intentional, designed to just take away the border, because I don't know how any rational person could reach any other conclusion when you look at the numbers. I used to say this last year, but it's still true. March of last year was the highest month on record for illegal crossings until April. April was the highest until May until June until July, when it was 212,000. And then August went down all the way to 209,000. And guess what happened just this March, just last month, 221,000. So we set a new record. So there is no way you can say this is not intentional. And I think that's one of the questions we need to pose to Secretary Marcus is, you're intentionally doing this for what reason? You don't want a border? What are you trying to accomplish? Is it raw politics? Is it appeasement of the left who believes in open border? What is the you talk about root cause. What's the root motivation for you intentionally not enforcing the law, intentionally putting in place policies that take away our southern border?
How poorly planned is this? I mean, they're not even attempting to say, while they allow this to happen, but you know what? We're going to go down. We're going to talk to Border Patrol. We're going to talk to, you know, ICE. We're going to talk to everybody we have to about this and really get to the, I mean, they could at least put on a show, give us a facade, and they won't even do that, which is what I find very bizarre.
Well, they are trying. Now remember this, the communities on the border feel it. They know it. That's why you're seeing Republicans get elected to mayor of some of these towns, and you're seeing Hispanics in Texas move to the Republican Party because they actually want a secure border. But they are trying to hide when they put people on flights and send them to, for example, White Plains, New York. So they are trying to hide some of that. But I think Americans are waking up to this. They're, wait a minute, what's going on here? Middle of the night flights to communities all over the country. What are you guys up to? So I do think the country is beginning to wake up to that, and of course, all the other crazy policies.
They're bringing them to you, too. Greg Abbott is sending busload after busload of illegals to the steps of the Capitol. Have you seen, observed, had any interaction with any of that?
Yeah, we saw that on TV. That you know, there's been multiple busloads now arrive at the Capitol. And I think that's appropriate. I mean, Joe Biden's caused this problem. Joe Biden needs to understand what's really going on here.
Yeah, and I think the best thing I heard from Greg Abbott yesterday was, by the way, you know, Delaware looks like a good location, too.
Well, remember the first three missions of the Department of Homeland Security. Mission number one is helping prevent terrorism. Then number two is secure the border. Number three is enforcement of immigration law. So we know they're not doing two and three. But there's a concern with number one, because it's been reported by some news outlets this past week. 23 people were apprehended there on the border, were on the terrorist watch list. So if you catch 23, if you find 23, imagine how many that weren't on the terrorist watch list. I mean, excuse me, that were on the terrorist watch list,
right,
who got through, that weren't caught. So this is a big concern as well, and I think that'll be something we'll talk about next week.
Coming up, crime in New York City.
We have unleashed the forces of anarchy with this phony narrative about fake police racism, and the people who are paying the price initially are blacks, but the crime wave is spreading. It is coming to a suburb near you.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Mark Davis. New York City Mayor Eric Adams was elected with a pledge to bring safety to the streets of America's great city once again. He was arguably the least progressive of the progressive candidates. But the symbolic act of electing a former cop has not exactly in and of itself served to ease the spike in crime. Let's look at some numbers. Over the course of the last month, the Big Apple has seen a 95% spike in shootings, a 60% jump in homicides, a 54% increase in reported rapes. My friend Joe Piscopo turned to Heather McDonald of the Manhattan Institute.
You know me. I walk the inner cities. My mantra for most of my life, Heather McDonald, is to help out the quote-unquote at-risk community. And then they want to defund the police. And I'm knowing who I know from personal experience who's helping the at-risk community. And it's the police that step up. Now, you believe that the defund the police movement has led to that spike in black murder victims in those high-risk areas, yes?
Well, clearly, we've seen this before in 2015, 2016, with the first iteration of the Black Lives Matter movement, when cops were being demonized, and you could see there's a direct inverse correlation. Stops and arrests go down, crime goes up. We saw that 2015, 2016. Over those 2 years, there was another 2,000 black lives taken, the largest two-year increase in 50 years. 2020, after the George Floyd race riots, you had an even steeper drop-off in policing. Police were leaving the profession in droves because they're being told from day one when they step on the job that they're a racist. 2020 saw the largest one-year increase in homicide in this nation's history, nearly 30%. That is a statistical change that is almost unheard of in any field of activity. But another 2,000 black lives killed, 50 black children gunned down in drive-by shootings. If even one white child was gunned down in a drive-by shooting, there would be a national revolution. But instead, since they're black kids shot by black gangbangers, the media doesn't care, doesn't give them one peep of attention. Black Lives Matter activists never showed up for those black children's funerals. And now you have, you know, the crime rate rises increasing. Black lives continue to be taken, and the good law-abiding people in high crime areas, as you know, Joe, and as I have heard numerous times when I go to police community meetings, they are begging for the police to go back to enforcing the law, enforcing those low-level broken windows offenses. You know, they ask, why are the kids loitering on the street? Why are they hanging out fighting? There's drug dealers outside my street corner. Why don't you ever get them off the street for good and for all? So, yes, I mean, we have unleashed the forces of anarchy with this phony narrative about fake police racism. And the people who are paying the price initially are blacks, but the crime wave is spreading. It is coming to a suburb near you. The carjackings are spreading. The looting, obviously. We've seen the video. It is everywhere. You know, stores are closing down. Goods are under lock and seal because theft is so high. This is not necessary. It is not civilized. We know how to fight crime. We did it under Giuliani. We can do it again. We just have to have the will.
Do you have faith in Eric Adams, Heather McDonald, that he's seeing the light finally? Or are we giving him too much leeway, do you think?
Well, I'm gonna wait and see. Here's what he's got to do, Joe. Everything in the criminal justice system today that is happening is driven by one idea, and that is disparate impact. If you enforce the law in a colorblind constitutional matter, sad to say, you will have a disparate impact on blacks, not because the police are racist, not because prosecutors are racist, but because there is family breakdown in the inner city and blacks commit the way disproportionate share of crime. In New York City, for example, blacks are 23% of the population. They commit year to year anywhere between 70 to 75% of all drive-by shootings. If you add Hispanic shootings to black shootings, you account for virtually 100% of all shootings in New York City. So if you go where people are being victimized by those shootings, try to get the guns off the street, you will be stopping more blacks. I'm sorry, that is inevitable if you're going to enforce the law. Eric Adams is going to have to face down the race activists who say that if the police are having more interactions with black criminals, that means they're racist and they have to back down. He made that charge against the NYPD when he was a captain himself.
Yep.
This is why I am somewhat skeptical about whether he will go forward. On the other hand, he wants to be viewed as a successful mayor, and the only way he's going to be a successful mayor is if he can stop this crime tsunami that New York is in. So I'm going to wait and see, but I can tell you this is his challenge. He is going to have to fight down, the back down, and not blink when they hit him with the disparate impact charge, and they're already starting to do that.
Heather, God bless you. You're so speaking the truth. And I know it because, like I tell you, I would walk Camden, New Jersey when it was the most dangerous city in America. After the riots in Newark, it took us, and I'm just a foot soldier. I'm not one of the philanthropic giants that stepped up to the great city of Newark to save it. 50 years it took, Heather. 50 years. And you're right. When I went to the Newark Detention Center, I tell the story. And if you're listening, you know you've heard me talk about it over and over again. And it's so refreshing to have Heather McDonald speak the truth. I said to those kids at the Newark Detention Center, and they were, mostly African-American children. And I said, how many fathers are in the house? Not one kid raised his hand, and we don't address it. Now, you and I talking like this, we're racist. Why do we have to get thrown? We're trying to help. What you're talking about, Heather McDonald, is helping out the most at-risk communities in the United States of America. And I know we have to help Ukraine, and we have to help, but they forget about the American. This is the pandemic. Is the black-on-black crime in the inner cities, Heather, and the police can stop it. And how do we change the mantra, aside from you and I chatting about it on the radio?
Well, anybody, you have to be absolutely indifferent to being called a racist. You have to keep telling the truth.
Yeah.
The change also has to come from within the community. There's not a whole lot you and I can do. Black leaders have to step up and start talking about families and valorizing fathers themselves. And the elites in this country are absolutely terrified that those behavioral and academic skills gaps are not going to close, and so they're working sort of preemptively to allow the only allowable explanation for those gaps is racism. And so you have this bizarre situation where a civilization is tearing itself down, is constantly accusing itself of being oppressive.
Coming up,
you have to ask yourself, what sort of upbringing does it take to create boys who routinely now go and shoot bullets across the sidewalk, and they don't care what happens?
A few more minutes with Heather McDonald in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Don Crow. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, the battle over kids in the public school rages on. But is it really that new?
For many in the cultural elites, the public schools are the way of gaining control of children.
Parents today are pushing back.
Parents, sadly, kind of fell asleep at the wheel. Now they're awakened. A sleeping giant has been awakened.
Their focus, the teachers' unions.
These unions are directly attacking our republic by purposely undermining our educational system, and they are undermining the family by sexualizing children.
We'll also look at the government use of the pandemic.
This is a crisis that never should go to waste. It gave enormous powers to those who were unelected.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Mark Davis. A shift away from demonizing the police and recognizing that they are an essential part of a safe city. That's a key component for a safer New York City. But fueling this violent crime wave are some dangerous and heartbreaking household trends, most notably the erosion of the family. In particular, far too many fathers are simply absent. Let's pick up on Joe Piscopo's conversation with Heather McDonald of the Manhattan Institute.
At this point, that family breakdown is absolutely cataclysmic. I mean, you have to ask yourself, what sort of upbringing does it take to create boys who routinely now go and shoot bullets across the sidewalk, and they don't care what happens? Black males between the ages of 14 and 17 commit gun homicide at 10 times the rate of white and Hispanic male teens between the ages of 14 and 17. What leads somebody to do that? And it is a complete breakdown of socialization. Boys need mothers and fathers. The biological family is essential for civilizing young males. And when the father is gone, there's a lot of heroic single mothers. One is obligated to put in this caveat. Of course, there's a lot of heroic single mothers that are beating the odds and are creating law-abiding children. But as Barack Obama said in 2008, when he was running for president the first time in Chicago, he gave a speech at the University of Chicago Law School berating black males for not taking responsibility for their children. He said, we've got to be honest.
Here's and what happened? You know why? They went after him, and they said, you're being racist. You can't say that. And all you're talking about is helping. Because I always say, it's you go to these big corporations, they give money to Black Lives Matter. And meantime, they're building, allegedly making the shoes in China with alleged slave labor. Why don't they just come into the cities that you and I are talking about here and put the jobs in, the manufacturing jobs within the inner cities? Change the whole dynamic of the inner city structure. And I've been talking about this, and you know who had it in the palm of his hand to do it was Barack Obama, and he ran for the hills. And then me, a lifelong Democrat for most of my life, before I left the party, I see the Democratic Party will not talk about what you and I are talking about and helping out the most at-risk communities in the United States of America. And how do you create an impetus to do this? Even Donald Trump created opportunity zones. Now there's nothing coming out of the Oval Office to help out these at-risk communities, Heather.
Absolutely true. But you have to also change the family structure. They should send in tutors and people to work with you, because some of these people are not really employable, to be perfectly honest. So they need the soft skills first. But the corporations are terrified of inner-city black dysfunction. They do not want to look at it. They don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's easier to give millions to Black Lives Matter for her Bel Air mansion.
Hey, thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers David Pouchon, Michael Cook, and Alex Perez. And let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Mark Davis, in for Hugh Hewitt, who, yes, simply had to go to France. Thanks for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.